Well, if you're anything like my wife Lindsay and I, after a long, hard day of work, it's really nice to sit down and put your feet up and turn on a television show and just let your mind numb a little. Because maybe your mind's been thinking, spinning all day long, and there comes a point where it's sometimes just nice to relax and just numb it some so that it's not constantly thinking and wondering and questioning. So we like to do that. One of the shows that we enjoy watching is called Lost, which is a very appropriately named show on television because if you have ever seen it, you're definitely lost when you watch it. We are. We never know what's going on with that show, but yet there's something in it that draws us back time and time again. Well, to try to help with the complexity of the show, every episode, they start with previously on Lost. And then they start to piece together scenes from the past and things that have happened, conversations that have taken place, so that as you begin watching this episode, it will help you with the feeling of lost. It never helps, but it's a nice gesture. Well, in that spirit, this morning we can say previously on Ruth. Right? Because we are in a four-week mini-series on the book of Ruth. This week is our second chapter. The first was last week. Chapter 1 was last week. And last week, we left off with the characters in our story, the two main ones, Naomi and Ruth. They had suffered great loss. Both of them had lost their husbands. They were widows. And with that, they lost provision, lineage, all the things that go with that, and were in a place of feeling hopeless, as if God's hand was against them and they were just there to suffer, very little hope for the future. They had just returned from Moab, a nation that was wicked, and Ruth was a Moabite. Though her roots came out of a wicked nation, she was a godly, loving, faithful, incredible woman. They had just returned to Israel, actually the town of Bethlehem, at harvest. And that is where the first chapter ends, and we pick up in chapter 2. If you have your Bibles with us, you can turn to Ruth chapter 2. If you're using the Bible provided for you in the chair, you'll find that on page 188. Chapter 2 is a fairly long chapter, so we're going to break it into three separate sections or scenes. You might think of a movie or a play has different scenes. We're going to break up the second chapter into three different scenes. As we make our way through, we're going to look at some background and observation for those. By the way, this message, Open Hands, is the second message in a series called Discovering God's Redemptive Plan. And that's what happens in the book of Ruth. We see God's redemptive plan being written in the lives of these characters. And hopefully we begin to see how God is wanting to do a redemptive work in our lives as well. Ruth 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. The first verse there mentions Boaz. It mentions how he's related, a relative of Naomi and of Ruth.
This is a signal, the fact that chapter 1 or chapter 2 verse 1 starts with Boaz before he's actually introduced into the story is something that the author wants the readers to pick up on. It's a statement that God's providence is what's driving this story. You see that? It's before he even comes in the story, before she goes out to the field, verse 1 is an introduction. Well, there's this man, a man of standing named Boaz. And then in verse 3, it says, as it turned out, she found herself working in a field to Boaz. Well, as it turned out, it just so happened that that is a way of saying, you know what, it turned out, but in fact, it wasn't coincidence. In fact, this was God's provision, his plan, his power guiding the story in Bethlehem. The same providence that about 1,000 years later, the providence that would guide Magi into the same town of Bethlehem to witness the birth of Christ. God's providence is always driving the story. The author wants the reader to see this. In verse 2, we see how Ruth, she took initiative. She didn't sit back and wonder, okay, well, I'm a widow, who's going to provide for me, or to try to be a burden to Naomi. Ruth took initiative. She said to Naomi, let me go to the fields. Let me pick up leftover grain behind anyone who I find favor. In doing so, not only did she take initiative as she got out to the field, but it was also a way of letting her need be known. Because those who were in the field gleaning were the poor. They were the ones with need. And as she walks into this field, it's obvious, well, here's a woman who has a need. The third thing we can see in these first three passages is a connection to an Old Testament law. And this Old Testament law is what drives this chapter forward. It's a law out of Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 and 10. It says, when you reap the harvest of your land, which is what they were doing, they were just going into harvest time. When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God. It's saying, do not grab onto everything that you think is yours. Do not grab all of the grain. Do not go back and take all of the fruit of the vine and hold on to it tightly. The law says, let some of the grain, some of the barley in this case, fall through your fingers. Let some on the edges of your life, the margins, let there be some behind you so that the poor, so that the alien have something to live on. It's really a law of love, isn't it? You know, when Jesus, in Matthew 23, when he summed up the law and the prophets, remember, or 22, when Matthew 22, when he summed up the law and the prophets, remember how he did that? He said, to sum it all up, he said, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind, strength. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. If you do these two things, all the laws in the Old Testament, all the prophets, what they're speaking of, you will fulfill them. Well, this is an example of that. That's a law of love, that you not hold tightly to everything that you feel is yours, but that you let, during harvest, let there be enough for the poor and the alien among you. Back into our story, verse 4. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you, "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "Well, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you, and wherever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you didn't know. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Just before I go on, I want to point out, have you ever prayed a prayer that you've ultimately been the answer to? You know, you pray for somebody, and then all of a sudden God taps you on the shoulder and says, "I want you to meet that need." I've done that. I've been there. Well, that's what you see here in Boaz. He's speaking prayers of blessing onto Ruth. And ultimately, the foreshadowing is he's going to be the one to answer it. Continuing on, verse 13. "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my lord," Ruth said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." She sat down with the harvesters. He offered some roasted grain, and she ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some of the stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field that evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. In this story, it begins verse 4, just then Boaz arrived. And I picture that, I mean, just then, when it just the right time, you know, it's almost this, you know, the superhero-esque comic book arrival at just then. You know, you get the sense that the hero of our story, at just the right time, when it was almost too late, Boaz arrived. And here he is, the hero of our story. Now, in this chapter, we see some things about Boaz. You remember the law from that I just read up here, Leviticus 19, it said what? When you harvest your field, leave a little on the edges. You know, have a little extra for the poor and for the alien, both of which Ruth was. She was a poor and she was an alien. But what we see in this chapter is that Boaz didn't just do the minimum. The minimum being the law. Leave a little extra. Boaz didn't just do that. Boaz went beyond the minimum. He went above and beyond as he interacted with Ruth. Let me show you a few places that I see that in. First of all, verse 5, when Boaz asked the foreman, "Who is that woman?" Now, Boaz has a field. The law was leave some extra, but Boaz wanted to know, wait, who are the people gleaning? He went above and beyond in that he cared for the needs to find out who are these people. So he pursued Ruth and he found out about her. When he found out about her, verse 8, he protected her. He says, don't go and glean in another field. Because remember from last week, this is in a dark time in Israel's history. This is in where wickedness was all surrounding. And during that time, there's a bright light in the righteousness of these characters. So it would not be safe for a young woman to go and glean in just any field. So Boaz protects her and says, you know what, don't go anywhere else. Stay in my field. I want you here. Work hard here. Another thing, in verse 9, you see that Boaz, in his going above the minimum, there's water for the workers, for his workers there. And he said, if you're thirsty, you can drink the water here. Well, that there wasn't a law about, you know, provide water for those who are gleaning. No, this is another way in which Boaz went beyond the minimum and says, you can, you know, drink all you want here. Verse 14, Boaz invited her to dinner. Have lunch or dinner with us. Again, going beyond the minimum. And then in verses 15 and 16, you see it even more when he says to his workers, hey, why don't you pull out some stalks from your bundles and just leave it there? Of the stuff that you normally harvest, why don't you just leave an abundance there? So, I mean, this isn't just leaving a little on the edges that Boaz is now doing. He's taking his harvest and, you know, having his workers, whoops, you know, try to leave this extra amount so that when Ruth comes, she would be well provided for. Boaz didn't just do what was required of him. He went beyond and beyond and beyond. In Ruth, in this section, we see that she's a hard worker. Ruth didn't just sit back and expect somebody else to provide for her. She went out there on her own initiative. She worked all morning, except for a short rest in the shelter, we're told, in verse 7, and then had a meal, and then afterwards it says at the end of that section I read, verse 17, it says that she worked until evening. So Ruth went out there and worked hard all day long from morning to evening. There's something about the law in Leviticus 19 that strikes me. For kind of both ways. For those who have the ability, who have a field, who can leave extra, they're told to do so. But the law is also set up in such a way that those who are needy, those who have need, need to actually go into the field and work for themselves. It wasn't just, hey, why don't you just take, if you have a field, harvest it, and then take a portion of that and give it to those in need. No, he said, those who can come work in the gleanings. And Ruth did that. It reminds me of 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10, that says, if a man will not work, he shall not eat. Right? So the law is set up in that way so that, and we see that in Ruth, that she had the initiative to go out and work. She worked hard. She worked all day long. And came away with a lot of grain. Continuing on, verses 18 through the end. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead, she added. The man is our close relative. He's one of our kinsmen redeemers. Then Ruth, the Moabitess, said, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finished harvesting all my grain. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, it will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and the wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. You see, immediately Naomi's reaction, where she's shocked with how much food came in, right? I mean, it's like, where did you get all this? I mean, this is enough to feed them for weeks from one day's work, just going after the gleanings, and yet came back with so much. And that points again to Boaz's generosity and his going beyond the minimum. Then we see the first time in which the kinsman redeemer is spoken in the book of Ruth. And we're going to save most of our explanation of the kinsman redeemer for next week, but I wanted this week to show you where this comes from so that you begin to get a sense of what this is all about. It comes from Deuteronomy 25, verses 5 and 6, another law, really a law of love that was spoken through Moses. It says, if brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. So this law of love, the law of a kinsman redeemer, was one that said if a man and a wife, the man dies before they're able to have a lineage, a history, the brother is supposed to step in. And the firstborn of the marriage shall be the lineage of the brother. Well, Boaz, though he was not actually her husband, Ruth's husband's brother, he was a close enough relative that we're told if he wanted to, he could fulfill being the kinsman redeemer. And so you see in this a statement of hope in the eyes of the characters. All of a sudden, chapter 2, while chapter 1 left without hope, chapter 2 comes and there's a glimmer of hope. You see, hey, wait, this man, he could possibly be our kinsman redeemer. Almost like there's this spark that maybe God just might come through for me. But yet, the chapter closes with suspense, in that there is provision for the harvest. He says, while you're with us in the harvest, you can work here, but you don't know what is going to happen after the harvest. So there's still a bit of suspense in the characters. What's going to happen to us afterwards? Will we be provided for? But yet there's hope there. One last thing, again. Did you notice again how many times Moab and Ruth was called the Moabitess? It's all over in this chapter. And you just see it everywhere, as if the author wants the reader to be reminded of Ruth's position, that she was a foreigner, she was a Moabitess, and that theme continues through this chapter. As I was studying this week, this chapter, the Lord just put someone on my heart, Mary Hunter. In fact, Mary, I want you to come up, because Mary's story parallels so closely what I see in chapter 1 and chapter 2 in Ruth. And I wanted her to come and give testimony to us this morning. so that the only stories we read aren't stories of thousands of years ago, but we see the same provision and hand of God here today and in our midst. So Mary, if some of you know her story better than others, but 6.5 years ago, Mary was on our staff and her life was full. Her life was full until one day when your world started to fall apart. Her husband sinned and left the family and left Mary as a single mom to six kids. Six kids, three of which were still in high school. And Mary, what happened during that season of your life when everything began to crumble? Hold on, let me make sure. There you go.
In the first part, as it started to unfold, I lost a lot. First, I lost my husband, which would mean the provisions that he provided. I lost the companionship, someone I had known for 25 years, and also the support to raise the kids. Holy cow, that was quite a bit. Then I realized I had finances that had to be put in order, and I better do something about it quick. So I sold the car. That's a miracle story because the man who bought it never drove it.
Wow.
It was like, okay, that one, actually, I could tell you a lot of stories. But I sold the car, and then I realized next had to go was the house. It had been our home for all the years we'd been here in Oregon, and I thought, well, it's got to go. That sold within 4 days. And then I lost my memory, so let me check my notes. Then I had to resign from my work. I had been on staff here for seven years, but I realized at the end of that year I couldn't take it forward. So one of the favorite things of mine was to work here, and I can't. So I did that also. But there's two things I didn't lose. I didn't lose my faith. I knew God was with me. There's something I can't explain to you, but even the very first day it unfolds, I go, He's with me. I know He's with me, so I trusted that and held that. And I didn't lose my kids. I thought, sure, in the midst of disaster, they would fall to the world. And, boy, they're holding. Yeah. There's more to that part.
Their kids are awesome.
Yeah.
You see, chapter 1 in Ruth, I mean, she lost all these things. You know, Mary lost her husband, her house, her car, her job, you know. And yet she didn't lose her faith. And that's when I look at Ruth, and when I look at Mary, and both of them, I see faithfulness. I see holding on tight to God during the times of suffering. And I was with Mary through that. And often we'd cry together. And it'd be like, God, what is going to happen? Why has all this happened? And yet she held so tight to God. That was the one thing she held to. Just like Ruth held tight to God. And it made all the difference in the world. Also, I see in you and Ruth that you both worked hard. You know, you did whatever it took to provide for your kids. And Ruth did what she needed to provide for Naomi. And lastly, when I look at your two stories, your story was known. You know, so often stories aren't known in the community of faith. People suffer and they suffer alone. But yet people knew. And so people had the opportunity to surround you. And Ruth, her story was known. Boaz had heard of her story in the community. So Mary, like Ruth, you had suffered great loss. But the people of Grace Point surrounded you. I mean, they came around you in a way that went beyond the minimum. Would you tell us about that?
Yeah, the first part is when it has to be told publicly, it's a huge embarrassment. You're just... We didn't even come to church that day. Pastor Steve said, it's okay, you can stay home, because we thought that was hard to take. Well, to our surprise, that day someone showed up at the house with 8 bags of groceries. Someone else gave money. Someone else came to the house with grocery store coupons. And then I was backing out of the driveway that same day, and someone just pulled in right behind me, jumped out of their car and handed me some money, said, here, take this. And that was just the start of many things that followed for weeks. People helped my kids. We were going to state swim meets. They didn't just bring us the food. They packed the lunch for the entire weekend. Someone else bought their T-shirts. that they could have, that the fund would still have. Others brought airplane tickets, had them provided for us, so my kids could come home from college. The one, Jesse was in college. And then a car. My daughter's girlfriend said, "Mom and Dad, can I give Mary my car?" Okay. You know, go ahead. There was a freezer. I'm not sure how the freezer thing worked out or how it came together. I believe it might have been a gift of many, but somehow it was given with food in it. And we're like, okay. There's one day there was, I came to work, Ian and I, if you remember, the Mitch School was here. We had to upload and unload all the tables and chairs every Saturday. Well, Ian was here with me. I went and checked the box. There was $800 cash in that box, and I put it on the table, and I said, "Ian, this is the body of Christ." And he wasn't sure what to make of it, you know. And in a certain way, I know he wanted his dad back, but, well, maybe this will get us through. Then after I resigned, someone called me a few months later and said, "Mary, you get a job yet?" And I said, "No, I didn't." He says, "Well, come on down." I said, "What do you do?" He goes, "It doesn't matter. You'll be fine." So the Lord provided for me for that for quite a long time. And then the very first Christmas we were going to be without him, I prayed and prayed, asking the Lord, "What do I do? How do I make it different? What could it be?" And you all have had bleacher friends, right? As parents, you sit in the bleachers with folks, and they just are your bleacher friends. Well, this lady sat next to me and said, "I know what I want to do for Christmas now." And I'm like, "Huh?" And she says, "Yeah, but my husband's been asking me for weeks, what can I do? What do I want for Christmas?" And she says, "I want to give my Christmas present to you." And I said, "You do?" She goes, "Where do you work?" So I told her, and the next day she shows up at my work. She hands me this envelope. She says, "Here, this is for you and the children for Christmas. It's $1,000 cash, and you can't give it back." Okay, we had the best Christmas. That's another story.
Wow. I'm inspired by the people of Grace Point. I am. I am inspired by you because you went beyond the minimum. Mary. I mean, and this is what community is supposed to be like. This is what you read about in the New Testament when it says that the people sold their possessions and they gave to people who had needs so that no one among them was without. And it's a story of going beyond the minimum, and it's we need to do it more. We need to do it more. We need to surround those with needs and love them and bless them and meet them. One other thing I'm compelled by, a connection point to Ruth's story and Mary's story, is that each point in the story of Ruth, love is what drives the story, God's redemptive story, forward. That's Ruth, when she chose to stay with Naomi, that was an act of love. And the story continues as they return to Bethlehem. In this chapter, Boaz has love towards Ruth, shows loving kindness in the way he deals with Ruth, and it drives God's redemptive story forward. Love is the thing that drives God's redemptive story forward. Love is what drove Mary's story forward. God's redemptive story in Mary's life forward is by the love of this church body. Mary, just before we conclude, how has God worked out his redemptive story in your life?
That's the best part. We can't always see it in chapter one, but as it unfolded, different people here adopted my kids, and you can pick favorites when you have as many as I do. They picked a favorite, and they blessed them in certain ways and others, and so I didn't lose my kids. God restored their hearts and the forgiveness that they found for their father, and things that happened in our lives that really strengthened them. And then also, at first, my friends had to pick me off the floor with a spatula, but God lifted my head. He strengthened my heart. He restored my joy. And then now, in the most recent, restored my work here. And so God had rewrote my future in a way I could not see. And so just trusting him and walking with him is the best part, because you go, wow, what's next?
Amen. Isn't that good? You know what? Let's give God a hand, because
It's God's story of redemption in Mary's life, and it's God's story of redemption in all of our lives as we journeyed with Mary. Let's close our Bibles, and as we conclude, take your hands, and let's everybody just take our hands and close them tightly. When we're born with clutched hands. We come into this world grabbing tightly as if to say that there is always a temptation to want more, to grab on, to hold tightly to the things in this world. In fact, very, very soon we learn the word mine as kids, and we use it often. Now take your hands that are held tightly and release them and open them. When we die, we will all die with open hands. As if to say there is nothing in this world we can hold on to. It will all be left behind. Nothing is truly ours. The question then is, how are we going to live? In between birth and death, are we going to live with our hands open? Are we going to live giving to those who need it? Are we going to live in a way that goes beyond the minimum? You ever notice when we worship God, we don't worship with our hands held tightly? You see people raising their hands because it doesn't work. You can't worship God with your hands held tightly. We worship God with our hands open, as if to say, Lord, everything I have, everything I am is yours. Use it. I give you my life of worship, a life of sacrifice. We'll conclude with this verse. One more law out of Deuteronomy. If there is a poor man among you, brothers, in any of the towns of the land that the Lord has given, your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards your brother. Rather, be open-handed and freely lend him whatever he needs. Lord, I thank you for the message of Ruth, the message of this chapter, where you're working out your redemptive story in the hearts of Boaz and the hearts of Ruth. In Boaz, we see generosity going beyond the minimum. We see open-handedness. Lord, but this is as much a message for those who identify with Ruth, those who are struggling and suffering, who need to cling to faithfulness, to your faithfulness. Lord, I pray that you would work in all of us this morning, whether we identify more with Ruth in the story or whether we identify more with Boaz in the story. Lord, I pray that we would live our lives open-handedly, Lord, because everything good comes from you.